Welcome to the Superhost Unveiled podcast, where a small family created a thriving vacation rental business in the heart of the White Mountains. Founded by husband and wife duo Peter and Julia Plord, with the help of their business-savvy daughter Hannah, Peter was able to leave his full-time job and move him and his wife to their dream location. Together, we'll discuss the secrets of building a successful vacation rental business and beyond. Pack your bags, let's check in for the journey of your life. Here are your superhosts, Hannah and Peter Plord. Welcome back, everyone. My name is Hannah, and I'm here with my dad, Peter.
Yes, and welcome to Superhost Unveiled, podcast number two.
This podcast, we're going to be talking all about the 411 exact metrics you need to hit the coveted Superhost status on Airbnb. So, Dad, can you tell us a little bit why Superhost is important? Like, why would someone want to be a Superhost?
Well, number one, it's super important. If you do just a random search for a property, wherever you all are that are listening, like, for example, if I, you know, go into Airbnb and I just randomly search for a North Conway property, there's over 300 plus properties up here, which is a lot. It's probably 10 pages of properties. And one of the main goals to stay relevant, to stay occupied, to maximize revenue for yourself, for your owners, is to be on that first page. If not the first, the second. If you're past second page, then things go sideways fast and you don't generate as much money as you could. So Superhost helps you do that. The other thing I would say is it gives you credibility, good, bad, or indifferent. It gives you credibility to the guests that are booking. It tells the guest a story and it tells them that you care about their visit. You care about putting the work in to elevate the stay to a five-star level stay.
Yeah, so there are exactly four things you need to have to become a Superhost on Airbnb. And those four things are your response rate. You need to have a 90% or higher. And we're going to be digging into all of these a bit further. You need to have at least a 4.8 star review or higher. You need to have 10 completed stays or 100 nights over 3+ days stays. And you can have less than 1% of cancellations. So why don't we dig right into response rate? What does 90% or higher mean?
Real quick before we do that, let me just say this. You get evaluated quarterly. So every quarter, you have to reestablish all of those metrics. So
that's a good point to add.
Yeah. So again, every quarter, and right now, I think during COVID, they actually grandfathered everyone in that was already a Superhost, and they automatically made you a Superhost during COVID. But soon it'll come back where we have to earn it again. So
yeah. So even if you get the Superhost status, you still need to keep it going and keep getting it.
Correct. You have to earn it every single quarter.
Gotcha. All right. So back into my question, what does it mean to have a 90% or higher response rate? Like what is response to?
Yeah. So that would be a response mostly to that initial inquiry. If a guest reaches out and wants to book your place, you get it, you know, you could get it insta-booked, but if they have a question or they don't qualify to insta-book for whatever reason, maybe they didn't, I don't know, give an ID or whatever, then that goes to you as an inquiry. And if you don't respond within a certain amount of time, then you lose that response rate. So it's super important to be responsive. And we, even now with 20 plus properties, I have 100% response rate. So we can kind of break down how to do that if you want now, or we can wait until a little bit later in the podcast to do it. And we can go into a lot more detail probably in another episode, I think.
Yeah. So I always, I guess, was confused about this. I thought it's any messages, but it's only for inquiries. Okay. So that's interesting because I was always under the impression that response rate was for every message that you received. So if I didn't respond to a message that came in at 2 a.m., I was going to get dinged for that. Is that not the case?
No. So how it works is it's only the initial inquiry, and you have 24 hours to respond, which, you know, think about it, I don't see why anyone would fall below 100%, honestly.
Yeah, 24 hours is such a long time unless, you know, you were, didn't have service or you missed it for some reason.
Now, let me just say this. You know, what I think super important is not necessarily only doing things to become a super host, but more doing things to make sure that you're creating a tremendous guest experience. And ultimately, the hardest thing to become a super host is to get 5-star reviews over and over again. So, you know, responding it within 24 hours, easy. Getting the visits, easy. Doing these, you know, not canceling guests, easy. All of that stuff is pretty easy. It's the little details that cause people not to become super hosts. Whether it's the guest walks in and it's not clean enough, or they have a bad experience because they can't figure out the lock code on their door, you know, whatever it is. So I would just tell everyone that, yeah, we all want to be super hosts, super important if all you're focused on is Airbnb, but ultimately you want to create this incredible guest experience every single time they come. So they create memories of a lifetime with their families and they come back to you over and over again.
Right. And responding to guest messages as quickly as possible is going to help them have that greater overall experience and leave ultimately a 5-star review if their stay was pleasant.
Right. So to your point, like, okay, I don't have to respond that quickly to a message, but really realistically, yeah, you do. Because if you don't, then, you know, you're leaving a big gap of space where a guest can think like, well, this host doesn't really care about me, you know, for whatever reason, that whatever question they might have, you know. So we do our best to respond within 5 minutes of a guest reaching out, and we use, you know, technology and we use people to accomplish that. So yeah, I think it's super important.
Yeah, if you think about it from the guest point of view, nowadays people want responses so quickly because they can Google something and get it immediately. They can, you know, go on YouTube and get answers immediately. They can search for a podcast and get answers immediately. So if they're searching for a place to vacation at, they're probably excited about this vacation and they want instant responses. They want to know exactly what's at the house. They want to know everything so it goes smoothly. Or if they're on their way to the house, they want to know how to get in because they're driving there actively and they don't want to wait around for 3 hours because they don't know how to get into the house. So just making sure you respond quickly will help people feel like you actually care about them and that you're invested in this just as much as they invested in their stay.
Exactly.
All right. So you said that you use technology to help with your response rate to make sure it's over 90%. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So from the very beginning, even when we only had one property, we used technology where we built messages from the booking inquiry, where a message would respond to that guest. Basically, like, let's say we were hiking or we weren't in good cell range and we didn't see the message come in, the automatic message the guest would say, it's like, hey, Julia and Peter are very appreciative that you want to book their place. They will get back to you as soon as they are able to, something like that. So it gives that guest understanding that someone's going to, you know, reach out to them as soon as they can and answer their question. So that's number one. But then, you know, digging deep into our messages, you know, we have, after the booking comes in, they get a message 7 days out, 2 days out, 24 hours after they have stayed there, after checkout. And why are we doing that? Communication is key to getting, and creating a great guest experience. So we don't take that lightly. And there's some secret messaging that we do, three, in fact, that I think are the keys to a 5-star review that I guarantee no one knows about.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing an entire episode on those three messages that you need to have to get 5-star review. Talking about these reviews, there's a lot that goes into just the review. It's not – the guest doesn't just click 5 stars and they're done. There's actually 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 categories that –
they can choose from. And all of that adds up into the overall 5-star review. So one thing I didn't know was that you don't see your ratings until you have 3 guests leave reviews. Is that right?
That's true.
Yeah. So for the first 3 guests, you're not going to know what they do. You see what
well,
they say?
You, or you can see what they you oh, can okay. see what they say, and you can see their review, but what but it does not show up on your listing.
Got it. Yeah. So yeah, so think about that. The guests or the future guests that you're hoping to get won't even see that you have reviews until you have more than 3 people stay. So the 7 things that go into a 5-star review or just reviews in general is the overall quality of the stay, the accuracy, check-in, cleanliness, communication, location, and value. So the overall quality is the overall quality. That's pretty straightforward. Do you have anything to add just on that category?
No, but what I will say is that value is a combination of just about all of them.
Yeah.
In a way. So if you're getting a low value score, you know, you got to look at, am I clean enough? Was my check-in easy? Am I communicating the right way with our guest? You know, all of those things. Are my pictures telling the story that's accurate, you know, when a guest walks in? So value is very important, you know, and you influence value from the beginning of the guest experience for sure.
Yeah. So let's talk about value a little bit. So the 2 points that I have here are, did the listing provide good value for the price, and the amenities? Are they working and in good condition? So it kind of basically says, are you telling the truth on your listing? Are you overpriced? Are you underpriced? Are your amenities that you list actually there and for able to use?
Yeah. So, you know, price is very sensitive subject. I've had many owners, I'll tell you, I have owners that have reached out to me and, you know, because of their feelings towards a property, they're emotional about it. They might, you know, I've had some owners think their prices were too low and they shouldn't fall below this number, whatever number that is. And then I've had owners think that their property didn't deserve that price and we were pricing too high. I always kind of, you know, say, and what's good about Price Labs, which if you listen to our first episode, I can't speak highly enough about them. It's a tool that you have to have in your toolbox to maximize your vacation rental. I 100% agree that has to happen. But I let that software do the work, but you can put in parameters for the software. So let's say I don't want to price my property below 150 a night. You can put the low in, or you can put a high in, and you can put a base price in. So I think it's very important that if you're going to demand top value or top price per night, then you have to make sure, like, for example, is the hot tub clean if you have a hot tub? You know, does the Keurig work? Do you have creamers for the guest when they arrive? Do you have coffee for the guest when they arrive? Or is that something they have to then once they arrive after, you know, we're a drive-to location. I think that's really important to state. So people are driving 2 to 3 to 4 hours getting here sometimes at 8 o'clock at night. Do you want that guest to have to be like, oh man, I got to go out in a grocery shop when I get there? You know, yeah, they're going to have to go pick up some stuff, but you want to make sure that they wake up to that hot cup of coffee in the morning, just the way they like it. And that adds a tremendous amount of value, that little tiny thing.
Yeah. And it's important to note that it's easy to feel attached to your property because you probably spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on it. But for 1-night stay or a 3-night stay, you can't be charging super, super high prices if the home itself is not worth that. You gain that money back by having more occupancy throughout the month, not by having really, really outrageously high prices. Do you agree?
I agree mostly. So you need a combination of both. So to Hannah's point, I've seen a price. I've seen two properties because we are able now to see, you know, 20 plus properties of data every month. And I really analyze the data and numbers don't lie, you know. So I've seen a property that sleeps six people that has a base price. Let's just make it up for now. I want to say it's about 150 a night. I've seen that property outperform a property that sleeps more people. They sleep eight people and their base price is 265. And to Hannah's point, the 265 property was trying to price at a certain point that dropped its occupancy down, where that 150 base price property was aggressive in their price point, but they drove their occupancy price so high that that house produced more income in a 30-day window than the other one that was more expensive and actually had more amenities.
Yeah, I feel like we could talk for hours about pricing, but we're just talking about the Superhost right now. So we'll definitely do a whole episode just on this because it's super interesting just talking about what if I do this, what if I change pricing to that. And like I said, we could talk about it for hours. So let's go move on to the accuracy because we kind of already talked about this, being transparent about your listing. So Airbnb breaks this down as having transparency in your bio, photos, and description. So you can't say that the home is tucked away in a secluded forest when it's right on the road. And it also says, how accurately does this listing represent the listing? And for, I'm going to repeat myself, so I'm not even going to say that. So basically, you can't lie about anything in your house because the guests that stay there are going to notice that and they will report back that it's not truthful.
100%. And I can give you a story really quick. So we manage this beautiful A-frame that's right on the Saco River up here. It's a great stay. It's one of those Instagrammable houses. You know, people leave us notes like, I sent video of this house with us in it to my friends because I wanted them to see this cool place we're staying at. And, you know, the river just runs through the backyard, basically. And it you know, if anyone's ever stayed where a river is flowing, you can hear it. It just, it's an incredible sense. It soothes your soul. It feeds your inner self. But my point is, I got carried away. I was like at the property.
Dreaming about
it. Yeah, I was dreaming about it. My point is, so we take pictures, you know, obviously, and in the pictures, it shows deck furniture on the front of this property with a propane fireplace that's lit in the picture. Mm-hmm. So think about it from a guest perspective. They're coming to the property. They're like, man, the guest already pictured themselves sitting in that furniture with the propane fireplace on, drinking a cup of coffee or having a glass of wine. Well, not so long ago, I would say less than a couple of weeks ago, we got hit with some snow up here. So the owner and I basically like, when should we pull that furniture off the front deck? Because it's very expensive and he doesn't want it to get damaged by weather. And up here, we get a ton of snow up here, obviously. So we put all that furniture away. And we put it, no one could stay there. The whole deck is, you know, empty now. Mm-hmm. So the guest was like, hey, you know, I think within 24 hours of the first walking in the door, they were like, hey, where's that propane gas fireplace? We're really excited to, you know, to have our cup of coffee out there. And now it's gone. I'm kind of bummed out. Yeah. And luckily, you know, we could tell him the truth, which is exactly what I just said. And he didn't ding us on it. But we definitely risked a five-star review there. And I didn't even necessarily think about it because I knew my intentions on why we did it was right. We weren't trying to fake the guest out. We were just trying to protect the client's furniture. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's tricky. You just got to be honest in one way or another. So if your property changes based on the weather, maybe you put in your description – furniture, outdoor furniture based on weather or something, weather permitted.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be a picture. I'll give a quick another example. Same kind of deal. We had a house that has a barbecue, you know, like you mm-hmm. can cook outside, but the owners had put it away. And we had just taken this house over. So I wasn't 100% like in my memory, I was like, I thought that was, you could cook outside. And then the guests were like, where is it? So I reached out to the owner like, oh yeah, we locked that away. And you know what happened up here was like it got cold. It was like in the, you know, very cold for like a week or 10 days straight. And people started putting stuff away like that. And then all of a sudden we got hit with these 50 degree days. And now everyone wants to cook out, do a bonfire, yeah, or sit out at that patio furniture, you know? So it was like, hold on a minute. We went a little too quick. And, but just for just another example, your amenities and the way you list them, you definitely don't want to list what you don't have. You know?
Yeah. And you won't get, you know, you won't get penalized for not having something. People just want to know what their options are when they list something or when they look at a listing. All right. Moving on to the check-in. So that's pretty self-explanatory. It's the ease of the check-in. How smooth did it go? So what are ways that you can improve this as an owner?
I mean, the only thing I can think of, because it's pretty basic, is spelling out exactly what that looks like to the guest, because they want to know ahead of time. They don't want to get there in the dark,
right?
Not know where the keypad is, if that's the way you're doing it, or the lock combination. They need to know that, and we give it to them not just once. We give it to them 2 to 3 times leading into them coming to our places. Because that gives people anxiety, you know, so you want to make that easy, smooth, and it really should never be a problem.
Yeah. And on Airbnb specifically, when they book the listing, you can see the address, but in our messages, we include the address and how they get into the house like 3 times before they arrive, right? So we send 3 different messages out just so they are 100% sure when they arrive how to get in.
Yeah, just to expand on it too, like I was just thinking, you know, check-in is not just putting your code in a door. It's also like, where do I park? You know, is parking funky at the location or is it easy? So, you know, you want to think about everything that goes into when they pull into that driveway, if you have one, you know, what that looks like, what that feels like, you know, do you have to go up a flight of stairs, you know, whatever it is, you know, I think you really need to spell it all out for everyone, you know, and we use a digital guidebook. I know we're not going to get into what we use today and how that all works, but you know, our digital guidebooks, and I'll give a shout out, Hostfully is our digital guidebook company, and they do an amazing job with guidebooks. And we give all of our guests that information that we're talking about in multiple ways. So not just in an, you know, a message through Airbnb, do they get the code and the check-in information, but they also can pull it up right on their phone on the digital guidebook.
Yeah. One thing I don't think you mentioned was directions to the house. So I recently stayed at an Airbnb where it actually doesn't show up on a GPS. And so like you type in the address and you don't know where it actually is. And so in cases like that, or if your GPS takes you to the wrong location, which we've had a house do that before, it's super important that you write really clear, detailed directions from lots of different directions that the guests could be coming in from, so that they don't get lost. And so the guests that I was staying with, I mean, the host that I was staying with in this particular case wrote super clear directions. And then he actually wrote custom directions just for me because I was coming from not too far away. And then he also went above and beyond by saying he was just a phone call away when we were driving there if he needed help with directions. So, you know, just doing things like that, making sure the guests can get to the house, know where the house is, what it looks like, how to get in, that will make your review even better. Next one up is cleanliness. Did the guests feel that the house was clean and tidy? And we've talked about this a lot. This is going to be an entire episode because we have a 54-point checklist that we go through for every single clean. And then we also have people that do a walkthrough after we get the house gets clean just to make sure it's 100% perfect. But what are some key points that you can do to make sure the house at least appears to be clean?
Well, I think the walkthrough was a game changer for us. So when we grew so fast, we weren't doing those. And we were so busy. We had 5 turnovers without really cleaners to help us. I remember one Sunday and it was me, you, and mom, and we did 5 turns in one day. Thank goodness that we're not there anymore. So, you know, we don't necessarily clean our own properties anymore. And that was a game changer. So I'm not saying, you know, if you're listening and you're about to launch one, you know, I would stress about it, but I wouldn't, you know, overly worry about it if you have one property. But soon you're going to want to do walkthroughs. And the walkthroughs are super important because they're not just opening a microwave or a kitchen or a fridge drawer. You know, it's more to that. Do the light bulbs all work? You know, hallway, closets, bedrooms, every single light bulb, do they work? Do you have soap for the dishwasher? You know, mm-hmm. We had a guest that blew through two pods and we ran out and we didn't catch it, you know? So what happens at that point is either a couple things. You either have to take your time to go run them more dishwasher detergent, tell them to just put everything in the dishwasher and not run it. And hopefully that's good enough to get that value score that you want, you know? So the 54-point checklist, it sounds amazing. You know, does our cleaners literally pull that out every time? No, of course not. But
yeah, if you just think about it, there's probably 54 things you have to clean in a house. So those are the pretty obvious ones. But I would say from our point of view, the things you got to think like a guest. So the first thing they do, they walk in the door. If they can see visible dirt just from walking in the door, that's a red flag. And then
smell.
Yeah. And then something mom would say is if the beds don't look perfectly made and like no wrinkles, guests will start looking for mistakes in the house. So that's when they'll start looking in the cabinets and seeing dirt there or that it's not being organized. You know, hair in the bathrooms, that's a big one. So if you don't have like the first impression is flawless, guests will actually start seeking out imperfections. Just not even if they're doing it on purpose, just because, you know, their brain is training them to do that. Anything else you want to add on cleanliness without doing an entire episode on it?
No, I think that episode definitely needs to have mom on it. So we're going to make sure we can sit her down in here and never talk about it.
She's really great with cleaning. All right. Next is communication, which is including response rate. So communication is response rate, candor, quickly, reliably, frequently. So how quickly and reliable are you at communicating with the guests? So,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, we do this. This is one of our top priorities, but we have automated messages that we automatically send out to every guest, but including or on top of that, we also are just constantly on our apps, just making sure we're responding to guests quickly and timely.
Correct. I kind of want to just read a couple.
Yeah, go for it.
That's cool. So, I think what'd be cool is if we took our listeners through just a little brief series of how our messages go. So I have one pulled up for, I'll disguise her name because she was a pretty recent guest. So it came over to us like this. It said, Hi, Julie and Peter. My mom is turning the big 5-0 and we are having a week away from home to celebrate in the mountains. We are very excited to be planning this. Hope all is well, and I will talk to you soon. So that's what we received when she booked our property. And this is the message that instantly went out like seconds later. Hello, Susan, and thanks for your reservation. I wanted to confirm right away your reservation at Echo Lake Leaf Peeping Haven starting on Tuesday, November 17th for 5 nights with 7 people. Thank you for your reservation. We are excited to have you stay in our home and enjoy all that the White Mountains has to offer. We will contact you 7 days before your arrival and give you some additional instructions to ensure a smooth check-in. Please feel free to ask any questions or special requests. Best regards, Julia and Peter. So that is our first message to the guests. And it kind of sets the tone that, hey, we're going to communicate with you. We're going to give you more information. Thank you very much. We're really excited that you picked us. There's a lot of people to choose from. And we're very excited that you picked us. I think that's important. You know, we didn't say that in verbatim, but that's kind of what was inside that message. Do you want me to keep going?
Sure.
So there's kind of a thread. I don't even know all of this thread, but basically she came back at some point. Looks like Might have been the same. Nope, it's like almost a month later. Hi, I'm just wondering if there's a coffee pot or a Keurig. So that kind of message, you know, isn't a stock message for us. So that's something either our team leader or myself or Julia or Hannah would have to respond to. And the response was very simple. We have both kinds. Wow, okay, that's awesome. Thank you. Hey, so we just cut away. I don't know if anyone realizes that, but we figured we explained it. There's crazy wind going on and we could hear it in our headphones. So we stopped what we were doing because we didn't know what was going on. So do you want me to keep going with the messages? Maybe one more message?
Sure. Yeah. So you were talking about the guest asked, was there a coffee pot available?
Or a Keurig.
Or a Keurig. Yeah. And what was your response?
It was just like simple, you know, yeah, we had both. This property has both kinds. And she was just kind of like, wow, okay, that's awesome. Thank you. Exclamation point. So then we get to the point where 7 days out now, and here's our 7 day out message. Hi, Susan, your check-in date is getting close and we're excited for your arrival. Reminding you that the address is, I'm not going to say the address. Check-in is on November 17th at 4 p.m. and check-out is at November 22nd at 11 a.m. As promised, here are the instructions for smooth check-in. And I like that sentence right there because it basically tells the guest, we're going to deliver on what we said we're going to deliver, and we're going to give you a smooth check-in, and here's how it starts. Your personal keyless entry code is the last four digits of your cell phone. You will use this to open the front door. Just hit the Slage button or your last four digit code. Hit the Slage button on your four digits to lock the door upon departure. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out. And then we give them like a link to the house rules. Please let us know if you have any questions. We look forward to hosting you soon. All the best, Julia and Peter.
That's one thing we didn't talk about for the check-in. If you have a digital keyless, is that what it's called? A keyless entry? Sending it to the last four digits of their cell phone is something that they won't forget and it's easy to remember. Whereas if you just had a random four-digit code, that's like one more thing they have to remember. So that takes the ease out of it.
Correct.
Should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, let's do it.
So next is location, which they include as the neighborhood, proximity to shopping centers, city center, safety, and noise. Not much you can do.
Yeah, I think they know, like most guests know. Like, well, I guess, you know, for us up here, you could kind of make your home appear that it's private and maybe it's not. You know, maybe you have neighbors, but you didn't put that in the screenshot or, you know, maybe, you know, like, where we live right on the busy road. Like if this was an Airbnb, I would kind of maybe not take a picture of the road, but I would explain like, hey, we're on a busy road.
Yeah. You
know? We do have a nice backyard, but you are going to have some noise on the front side of it. And we do have guests sometimes ask us, you know, I couldn't tell, like, is it secluded? Do you have neighbors? You know, some of our houses are in a neighborhood, mm-hmm. you know? So we have to tell our guests like there's quiet hours. You know, our neighbors expect us to respect those, and we hope that you can understand, you know, that you are in a neighborhood where
yeah. And I think if you are like, use the strengths of the house. So if you're secluded, that's a strength, but if you're super close to downtown, that's also a strength. Some people travel specifically to go shopping and to go to restaurants and stuff. So just because you're in town doesn't mean it's a bad thing. It just, you should play to that strength and not try to hide it.
Yeah, we have both. You know, perfect yeah. examples. We have one that you can walk to a local bar to. And then we have one, like we said just earlier, that's right on the Saco River. That's a little bit further out from town. And there's a guest for both those houses, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So I know you were saying there's one thing in value that you wanted to add about just when the guests first arrive. We leave a snack basket for them and a handwritten note for every single house and guest. Do you want to elaborate why we do this?
Yeah, I think the handwritten note is super important. And, you know, there's ways to do it. Your cleaners could do it. It's not, you know, the note is very simple. We used to write a lot, like right now we write pretty much the same note almost every time. And it's basically, you know, welcome. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. And at first I kind of cringed when I wrote that because Julia was the one that really believed in that statement. And I was like, man, I don't want people really to reach out to me. But no one reaches out to you. You know what I mean? Like, unless they need to. So it's really important, I think, that we do say that because it puts them at ease. They know that someone's local, someone's here. And if you're not local and you're hosting from far away, I'm sure you have a local person that can respond to the guest. And then it just says, you know, please enjoy our beautiful White Mountains and all that it has to offer or something like that. Just your host, Julia and Peter. And that's all we pretty much say.
Yeah. I like to open my notes and I think I got this from you guys, but I say, welcome home, the guest name. And I always say like, please make yourself at home in the house.
Yeah. And we stole that from Disney. You know, like if you go stay at a Disney property on property, whether it's Orlando, California, or wherever that property is, they'll say welcome home when you walk into any of their hotels. And it does sound corny, but it subliminally works. It makes you feel, maybe not the first time, but the third time, the fourth time that you go back to those properties, it does make you feel like you're going to your second home away from home.
Yeah. And my hope too, by saying words like home and family, it discourages large parties. Maybe that's just me wishfully thinking, but I hope using that language does that. All right. So next order of business for Superhost is the number of visits. So you have to have 10 completed stays or 100 nights over 3+ days stays. So basically that's not really anything you can manipulate, but you can do things that attract guests to book your place. And one of them is the pricing. Other things are certain key amenities. So Airbnb can let you filter your search based on certain things. And so some of those things are like hot tubs, having a pet-friendly house, trying to think of other ones, like single room versus whole house or private house versus shared house type of filter. You can filter it by price.
Yeah, just what I would say is think about restrictions. You know, so like the more restrictive you are, the harder it is to book a stay. So there's some restrictions that you're not going to get rid of, right? If you don't want to allow dogs, you're not going to get rid of that restriction. If you don't want a one-night stay, you're not going to get rid of that restriction. But every time you do add a restriction, it does in some way affect your listing and where it's listed on Airbnb. Let's just take pets, for example. If you do a search, now here's one thing I would recommend to everyone. If you have a property right now or multiple properties, you want to search in incognito mode. And the reason for doing that is your search engine knows, so Airbnb knows which properties are yours. So when you do a search in a regular Chrome Google search on Airbnb, sorry, I shouldn't say Google search, but if you do a regular Airbnb search and you put in the town, it's going to pop your property to the top of the list because it knows that it's yours. So if you do it incognito, it doesn't do that. So I've had many people say, yeah, I'm always on the first page, but then you do an incognito search and you never find them again. So if you do a random search up here, for example, over 300 plus properties, you then put in, you know, say put in put in Instabook. That's an important one.
Yeah.
It'll take the 300 to probably like 175, 150, 160, somewhere around there. Put in Superhost, might drop it to like 80. Put in pets, less than 3% of all properties across the whole platform allow pets. So once I put pets in up here, it drops it under 50. So think about it. You just took a 300 competitive market down to under 50 if you allow pets, if you hit the Superhost status, if you allow Instabook.
Yeah. And there are certain things that you can set yourself apart. So if you don't want to allow pets, like hot tubs do the same thing. It can really narrow down the search and get your listing to the top of the page. And, you know, talking about pets could be an entire episode itself. So
we have properties that allow them and some that don't. And yeah. They, you know, and they, and the one that there's some that don't allow them that book just as much as the ones that do.
Yeah. I really think it would really depend on your location. So for us, we're in a location where outdoors activities are super, like, that's the whole reason why people come up here. So people want to come up to hike with their dog. People want to come up to go on the lake with their dogs. So up here, it kind of just, it makes sense. But, you know, in some other locations, like if you're in a city, it might not make as much sense. Anything else to add?
The only thing I would add is when you first list a booking on Airbnb, you're allowed, you get pushed to the top of the search engine because you're new and Airbnb wants you to be successful. And then two, they give you the ability to give a new listing discount.
Yeah.
And I would say 9 out of 10 times for when I bring in a new property, I will allow that discount. The only times I haven't done that was in the heart of the busiest season up here. And I had a really good showing, good looking property. I decided not to and take the chance. But right now, for example, we're a little bit of a lull with November. I would 100% take advantage of what Airbnb gives you.
Yeah, because then if it's their discount, they're going to promote it because they want to make revenue. So they will do whatever they can to help you be successful, because really, they don't care if you're successful. It just brings in that money.
Yeah. What that does is now, instead of 10 completed stays, you only have to worry about the next 7.
Right.
You know, because that really the next, you know, the or 100 nights over 3+ days. I mean, that's, I don't even know why that's there, honestly.
Yeah. It's pretty rare to do that.
Yeah.
So the last thing is cancellations. And to be clear, it's if the host cancels the guest. So if the guests are canceling because, hey, there is a worldwide pandemic right now, that is not affecting your cancellation part for Superhost. But it's if you, the host, cancel the guest stay, and it has to be less than 1%. So my question would be, why would you even cancel a guest stay?
So we've done it before, you know, but not very often. And we've done it because, you know, we have a rule of 25 years or older, minimum age, just to protect the properties. I'm not saying that there's not very mature 21-year-olds. There probably is, and some very immature 30-year-olds. So it's not a foolproof, you know, policy, but it's something that we believe in, as a group. So
doesn't Airbnb actually recommend that now?
I feel like they went to that, but I don't know if they, I don't know how they even prove that that's happening.
Right.
So, you know, we had a person book, he was younger than 25. We saw his profile picture, but after the Insta book hit and we were like, oh gosh, this person looks young. So we messaged him and said, can you just tell us the age of your party? And, you know, he was honest with us and told us he was younger than 25. And then, you know, we ended up canceling him for that reason, but it's very rare that we cancel anyone.
Yeah. So I think we were reading an Airbnb article and it says, if the guest is clearly going to break a rule and doesn't seem to be, you know, following the rules that you have set, then they actually won't penalize you for that. So if you can somehow prove that they are going to bring a dog and your house is pet free, then you can cancel up to 3 bookings a year without penalty if it was an instant book reservation. That also includes if the listing doesn't meet the needs of the guests. So for example, they're handicapped and there's stairs to get into the front entrance, then you can cancel that without any penalty. And you can, like I said, cancel up to 3 of these bookings a year if it was an instant book without penalty. But you don't want to be doing that. It's always a last resort.
Yeah. What I'll always try to do is get the guest to cancel, you know, ask them, hey, could you cancel? You know, you want to bring a dog and this is a pet friendly, you know, house.
This isn't a pet friendly
house. So, you know, I would recommend canceling your reservation, and that usually will work 9 out of 10 times. But if it doesn't, then we do what we have to do.
Yeah. Cause remember, the policy only refers to if you, the host, cancels the guest. If the guest cancels, then that's fine. All right.
Right.
Anything that we missed so far, just to do a little recap, the 4 things you need to get the Superhost status, which is updated quarterly, is have a 90% or higher response rate, and that's only to the initial inquiry. It's not to all messages. You need to have a 4.8 star rating or higher. You need to have at least 10 completed stays, and you have to have less than 1% of cancellations. Seems pretty easy to do, and especially if you're doing your research and you're, you know, really putting your heart into each stay, it should be fairly easy. But what can you do if you're not a super host? Because, you know, you do have to wait until you get a certain number of stays and wait until the quarter's over to get that status. So what can you do if you're not one?
You just got to do everything you can to make sure you get 5 stars on every review. So I think, you know, Airbnb rewards host going on the site. So every day when we first started, I was on Airbnb's site and I was tweaking stuff, moving a picture around, changing my wording on a description, changing my listing title, changing my prices. All that stuff signifies to Airbnb that I'm an engaged host, and that can really help you in the search engine. You know, the other thing I was going to say is that, you know, where I see people fail at this is in really two areas. One is cleanliness. You know, that's the hardest thing, I think, to hit that, to hit that cleanliness standard. And then the other one is kind of communication and value tied together. And probably all three of those are kind of tied together. And I think we can go into a lot more detail on those.
And we will.
You know, what I'm proud of is that our first property is over, I think it's like 75 straight 5-star reviews. And then our second one is over 50, I think, 5-star reviews in a row. So, you know, I'm just here to tell you, like, you can do it. You got to be passionate about it. And if you just have a good system for the visit, you will get the reviews, and it will happen. One thing we didn't talk about, I do ask for 5-star reviews.
Oh yeah, true. In one of the after the checkout message, we ask for 5-star reviews.
Yeah, and I've listened to many podcasts where they don't, and they actually say they think that's like
tacky.
But I you know what? No one's ever made me feel like I was being size. We say it in a certain way in that message.
Yeah.
That's very, very unobtrusive. You know, it's like, hey, you know, our goal is this. We hope that we executed, and everything we did leading into the stay, during the stay, with our communication and our response times builds into that review. So once they, you know, one thing I will say, we get a lot of reviews. I would say 9 out of 10 guests review us, which is not normal, I don't think.
Yeah.
From what I learned.
Yeah. I think just the act of asking for a review, you don't have to say, give me a 5-star review, but just the act of asking for one kind of triggers the guest to leave one, because you don't have to leave a review, but the more reviews you get as a host, the more success you're going to see. So you want to get reviews.
Yeah. Reviews definitely is super important for you to keep ranking high on the search engine for Airbnb. You have to get not just reviews, you have to get good reviews.
Right. You know? Yeah. And if you get lots of bad reviews, that's going to really hurt you.
Yeah. And the other thing, you have to get visits, you know, so like getting a lot of visits is important. So back to allowing a one-night visit, where I didn't like doing it at the beginning, because we were worried about parties and stuff. But the more visits you get, the better, because you get more chances to, and back to the story about high price, low price, those two properties,
yeah.
You know, the occupancy of that lower priced property got a lot more visits, a lot more reviews. They kept our cleaners active and busy. So we were able to keep them engaged. And it kept our listing momentum going. You know, so where if you go, let's say, a week or two without a booking, that's telling Airbnb that people have lost interest in you.
Right.
And that's like
that's what you don't want.
That is a bad thing. That's like the Death Star.
Yeah.
Of Airbnb. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you aren't a super host, you should be focusing on things that you can control. So that's just making a stellar listing, making sure your photos are amazing. You'd be surprised how many listings are on Airbnb and VRBO and all those platforms that just have awful photos. And that's the first thing that's going to turn someone away. And then making sure you have the amenities that people want. They want to have internet. They want to have TV. They want to have, depending on your location, a fireplace or a grill. And just making sure your description is eye-catching and going to excite someone to book. All right, everybody. So thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Superhost Unveiled podcast. Dad, do you have any last things you want to add?
I just want people to remember that anyone can do this. So if you're thinking like, man, I don't know if this is for me, or I don't know if I'm good enough, you are good enough. You have the skills. You can do it. If I can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah. We hope that you are left feeling inspired and ready to dive into the world of vacation rentals. We encourage you to come visit us on Instagram. We're at Superhost Unveiled, and let us know that you listen, share it to your stories and tag us in it. We love to see that. Of course, please leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with a friend to help our podcast grow. Have a good one.
Bye, everybody.
See you next time.